Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy. I'm Matthew Winner. Today's guest is Daniel Miaris. He has a new picture book out that was written by Newbery medalist Kwame Alexander. And the new picture book is called Surf's Up. It's about two frogs, one that wants to go to the beach and one that wants to read his book. It's fantastic. Wonderful to read aloud. Grab a partner and read aloud together. You'll like it even more. Before we get to that, I want to talk to you about All the Wonders. Many of you, I think, listen to this podcast through the home site, through allthewonders.com, which is wonderful, which means you've had a chance to check out what we're doing over at that site. And maybe this month you saw the feature we're running on This Is Sadie, that beautiful picture book written by Sarah O'Leary and illustrated by Julie Morstad. We're working really hard to connect with the parent community and the reader community, and to help all of them see the wonder in books and celebrate the wonder in books and talk about the wonder in books. And we're starting to grow our team and build our team and expand our team, and that's where you come in. I would love if any of you have ideas to share, if you've wanted an opportunity to have a platform to talk to the parent community about creating books, about reading to children, about going to the library and selecting books, about the wonder that's in books, anything that will engage parents more in wanting to care about books, I want to know about it. I'm going to give you an email address here that you can share your ideas with us, and we'll get in contact with you, and we want to hear you out, and we want to see if your ideas are right for the site. So please, please do that. Please step out boldly and share your ideas. I can't wait to hear them. The email address is here at allthewonders.com. That's H-E-R-E at allthewonders.com. I'm going to be counting on you to send that email. I'm going to be watching my inbox. Okay, back to Daniel Miaris. Here's a great thing about Daniel. So Daniel has this new book out called Surf's Up. It's amazing. The book that I think really hit hard for him in the publishing world, in the library world, in the kidlit community last year was Float, his wordless picture book about a boy who takes a paper boat made from a newspaper out into the rain to sail it through puddles, and he ends up sailing it on the current of the water that's running down the drain. Down the gutter of the sidewalk, but then the boat gets away from him, and there's a tragedy with the boat that really breaks the boy's heart, and it's told wordlessly, and so your eyes are just reading over these gorgeous illustrations in bright yellow popping from the boy's rain slickers to the gray tones of the environment that he's out playing in. It's beautiful. And what I love even more is that when I share that book with my students, they understand the power of wordless storytelling. So much, in fact, that they use more words to talk about the book than I've almost ever heard them use in other books. It's amazing. And I think that you will hear me saying almost those exact same words to Daniel. It's hard to hide my enthusiasm and my love for a book that not only that I love, but that my students love so much too. If you haven't read it, I strongly encourage you to pick it up and to study it and to wonder with it and just love it. And then check out their new book, Surf's Up, with Kwame Alexander and Daniel Denny illustrations. It's amazing. You'll love it. All right. Well, this is episode 232 of the Let's Get Busy podcast. I hope you enjoy this chat so much. Here we go. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Daniel Miares. I feel gifted. I feel blessed to get to talk to you today.
I feel blessed to be here. It's a real pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Hey, can I tell you a little classroom honor before we get into the other amazing stuff that you have going on? I wanted to share this connection with you, and I didn't share it with you off recording. Is that all right?
Sure. Go
ahead. So Daniel, you've been around our library for a while, but you've been celebrated the past 2 years in a row through our mock Caldecott, because last year, pardon me, was one of the nominees in our mock Caldecott that our third graders select. Yeah, I love to show them as many of the, in that case, the 2014 books that we've purchased for our library, that we brought into our library that year, and they sort of help make what are our nominees, and then beyond that, they all of third grade reads them, and then they select their honors and medal. But Pardon Me was on our list to read and float. Then this year it was on our list, and I just was like, "This is Daniel. This is so cool." And then wouldn't you know, I get an email that there's this new picture book coming out that Kwame Alexander wrote that you illustrated, Surf's Up, and it's so cool to me that in that way, and this happens to librarians a lot, I think, but it's a blessing that you've been in my life and in the life of my readers for a couple of years now, and I really love your stories and what you're sharing with everyone.
What an honor. I've gotten to hear from a lot of people over the past couple of years about my books and how they're connecting with them, but only this year have I really understood a lot of the inner workings of classrooms and libraries, and how these books like Float have been a part of their daily routines. And it just feels so, it's like the third dimension of picture book making. You know, you can start with a story idea, and then there's the process of publishing it, making the book, making it the best it can be. But then once it gets out in the world, I can represent my books, but to hear from people how they've come across my book in the stacks, or they got a box from school or junior library guild, and they opened it up and found my book, or someone recommended a book and they came across it that way. And I get to hear and see pictures and stories about how these stories are a part of the classroom or library experiences. And it's really humbling, but it's just an amazing full circle moment. You know, you create stories and you think about them in terms of what I bring to it, but then the readers and the teachers and the librarians bring so much more to it than I ever could, that it just gets really exciting because a year after a book has been completed, there's still conversations to have about it, and there's still ways that, you know, people are getting excited and having fun with it or crying over it or whatever it is. It's really fun to see. And it's really wonderful to, you know, because I can't be everywhere, you know, I can't travel everywhere at once, but it's really amazing when people share their stories back or I catch wind of them, because that's better than any financial compensation or, you know, anything you might get out of the process. You just really feel like things that you're creating actually do make a difference. You know, if a kid might be excited about reading that day just because of a book you made, that's pretty exciting. So thank you.
Yeah. I can't even imagine that experience. I mean, I think too about how long the book stays with you, how long you've, you know, spent your life with this story and with these pictures, and then you send it off, and hopefully, I mean, you're not, but hopefully, I was going to say, you're not like sick of it by then. Well, maybe I think the thing I hear happening to illustrators a lot, and maybe to authors as well too, is that that challenge of knowing when to stop and to be done and to pass it off, because there's sort of always more touching up that you want to do, or more that you want to add, or different ways to view how you can illustrate something. At one point, you just have to stop. But when you do stop and when it does come out to all of these kids and to all of the adults who read to those kids and the adults that just read to enjoy them, I think a lot about how we then get to sort of pick at your subconscious, at the things that were going on there that you might have intentionally done, or as you're sort of saying, there might be things there that you didn't expect were going to happen. And that could happen even in Surf's Up with someone else's words, with Kwame's words and your art. And the way then that the two of them come together means that there's these two different subconsciouses that are working. But then when we come on to read, we, you know, give a voice to these characters, literally. And there can be a theater to the way a picture book is brought to life. And just there's sort of, as much as you work on your end to deliver the story to us the way that you want it to be, inevitably there is still a portion there left for us to continue pushing that story forward, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we were talking off air about, you know, when I make a book or a story, I spend so much time making it, and it makes it out in the world. And at some point I do have to let it go and say, you know what, it is what it is. I feel like I've done the best job I can. I feel like me and the team I'm working with the publisher, have done the best job we can, and the author has, and it's out in the world, and it takes on a life of its own. And I've learned that the more people interact with it and the more I share my books with people, the more I learn about the book itself. It's definitely not complete when I'm done with it. And that's exciting. And I think I'm realizing that's a natural part of the bookmaking process, but going into it, I had no idea. I just didn't anticipate the aftermath of releasing a book. It was all about publishing it. You know, when you receive that book in the mail, that's the completion. You know,
right.
I'm holding it.
Look, it's done. But it's a hard copy. It's a real thing. It's done. Right. I did it. But no.
Like, put it on the shelf like some trophy and say, yeah, there it is. But that is that's kind of sad, really.
I mean, it is. How sad would it be that a book is just there to be done with and to age? They stay young when we read them, right?
Absolutely. And they become so much more and so much better. I mean, my imagination can only go so far. Kwame Alexander's imagination can only go so far. And that's not a slight on either one of us, but it's just the truth. I mean, we're human beings. But I think as a collective, as a community, when you've got especially children and teachers and librarians encouraging these kids and parents, then, you know, the story becomes bigger and something more amazing. I mean, that's why words and images put together are so powerful, because each person that interacts with them have a new point of view to bring to it. And that to me encourages me, because I'm the kind of person that doesn't like formulas. And when I get, my natural instinct is to look for a formula and try to exploit that. But once I see or recognize that happening, I feel like, well, I need to move off of my safe spot here and look for something that's inspired and something that's different than what I did last time. But what you mentioned about, you know, everything that everyone else brings to it that kind of adds to the mix or the soup, you know, to me, that's the big encouragement, because I can come up with what I think is, you know, the best storyline or plot line for Surf's Up. Kwame comes at it from his point of view and what he thinks is best. But then somehow we come together and collaborate on that and bring a product forward. But then there's all the readers, all the booksellers, all the teachers, everyone else coming and bringing their point of view about, you know, filling in the gaps that we left. You know, to me, that's the exciting part, is the fact that there's no formula for how to make a successful book. It's all those things have to gel, and you can't pick that. You can't choose it. You can't anticipate it. But it's really darn exciting when it happens, and encouraging. I mean, oftentimes the process can be, if you think of it very linearly, like there's no going back or there's no way to change or evolve something past a certain point, you know, it can get really, you know, kind of depressing if you think about
it.
But
yeah.
But the fact that everyone else down the line can bring something new to the story and be encouraged in a different way, it's really exciting. And And it teaches you a lot about, it teaches you more about just people and the human experience, which becomes fodder for your next work, you know? And that's exciting too. It just doesn't stop.
Yes. The fact that, one, that it doesn't stop, that it keeps pushing you forward, but that, I guess, okay, so I'm a teacher. And
yeah,
it's very easy for me to say that every day I learn something from those kids. Because
I'm sure you do.
It's true, but it's also, isn't it the willingness to listen to them and to hear? So when I hear back from you saying that you're still learning and you're still discovering, and when kids say stuff about the books, about the illustrations you make, about the story you tell, that you hadn't thought of before, that you are discovering these things too, that also is conceding, though, that you have a willingness to allow them to be a part of the story. And I think that says something about you, Daniel, because I think that certainly there are people, perhaps not working in children's literature, I'd love to think not working in children's literature, that would say, no, you're wrong. This is the way you're supposed to interpret that. And that's that. Now, it could be actually that some children, I think, have completely different agendas when they're interpreting work. But I can see in, I don't know, in Float, or I can see in, pardon me, even, that there are, I can see points where a kid could come and interpret something a certain way because they see themselves in your story, or they see an experience that they've had in your story. And so they, in that way, are giving back their connection to your story. They're sharing their story with you. And how couldn't you be changed by hearing their story?
Absolutely. I mean, you have to be, like you said, willing to, you know, to accept that or take it in and process it and have it be a part of, you know, you. But it can be very intentional too, you know, when you're making a book, you know, leaving that white space, leaving the negative space for them to come in and, you know, and bring something unique to it, I think is an acknowledgement that that's going to happen or should happen. And also, you know, saying that I care about that enough to make it a part of my story, you know, to stop short, to not overpaint it or not to overwrite it. I think that's really critical, and it's a very important process. And just like if I were writing a story, I wouldn't want to write every detail because there's going to be a lot of pictures that are going to bring information, very important information to this story. So why duplicate effort and vice versa? You know, why paint an emotional state that the editorial is already describing for you? You know, you need to take it somewhere different so that the story can become bigger and broader. And, you know, I really think there's nothing wrong with leaving that space for the viewer to, you know, to bring something unique, whether it's maybe they're bringing judgment on your story in that open space. That's okay. You know, that's okay. You know, maybe that's what you need at that point, because maybe you're going to surprise them in the end. You know, you're going to bring them around in the end, but they need that time to jump to a conclusion, which we all are guilty of, you know, jump to the conclusion and then you mm-hmm. surprise them in the end. You know, the setup, you know, is necessary to have the payoff sometimes. And I think, you know, not that we're just puppet masters, but I think, you know, leaving that space allows people to take ownership, you know, and once a child takes ownership of a story, those are the ones they want to drag off the shelf every night and read, you know, the ones that they have no part to play in. I just think they throw them in the drawer and don't touch them, you know, because there's nothing for them to do.
I think that yes, leaving room for the child to interpret, to understand, to jump to those conclusions is so important. But what you're saying here is also blowing my mind a little bit so when I talked to Kwame, he was talking about, he referenced, I can't remember what person it was that was saying, maybe it was Nikki Giovanni, I can't remember, whoever it was saying about writing poetry and that white space on the side, that white space you leave for the spiritual journey, for the imagination. And that's literal white space, but to hear you say it as well in illustration, that the goal is not in illustration to cover everything that the words couldn't cover, or or to fill the page, or to whatever, look like some exceptional piece of art that you could rip out and frame, but rather that it's both to tell the story and to leave part of the story for the reader to tell. I don't think I've heard it put that way, but it works so nicely to know that you and Kwame both have, I guess that you both have that appreciation for the white space and for its role, both in telling the story and in leaving room for the story to be told.
Well, I was reading a book with my daughter the other night, and she hasn't pulled this book off the shelf in a long time, but she pulled out Where the Wild Things Are. And I was like, oh, you know, a classic. Let's do this. Okay. So we read through it, and, you know, she giggled and laughed at certain parts, and she got kind of sad at certain parts. And then at the end, you know, when the very last page where it says, and it was still hot, yeah. You know, up to that point, you know, Maury Sendak had drawn the HE double hockey sticks out of that book. You know, he had crosshatched and drawn, you know, every leaf, every turn of fur, every, you know, everything up to that point. And there's no illustration on that page. There's just those few words. And, you know, I like to think, I don't know for sure, but I like to think that was an intentional decision to say, you know what, this is the point at which, you know, it's all driven home. You know, that's the point at which, you know, he's going to be okay, and that his mother really loves him, and, you know, grace has been shown, but you don't need a picture for that. You know, as an artist, you have to know when to say when, and when to say, you know what, I just need a few words here to really open it up. And that's the point at which I could literally see the gears turning in my daughter's mind, you know, when she read those last lines. But I don't think that would have happened if you had shown, you know, if you had shown everything that was going on, and exactly the facial expression of Max. And, you know, for me, that's a really savvy move. And I think as storytellers, that's part of it, you know, knowing when not to talk or when not to act something out. And that's very nuts and bolts, you know. I'm sure, you know, at a higher spiritual level, there's other things going on too. But in terms of just making stories, those kinds of moments are the differences between, you know, expected and trite and exceptional and unexpected.
My word, you're right. I mean, you're right. Here's what I can't stop thinking about. First off, that floored me. That was wonderful. Thank you. Thank you for taking me to school on that, Daniel.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was amazing. No, I mean, like, I had to remember that we were still recording. But I kept trying to picture that last spread, thinking, I haven't read that book in a long time. And then I kept thinking, is it really just words? It must really be just words. And that power then speaks to me that I picture it as this full illustration, and it's not. And then it was causing me to think of other picture books that are doing that too. And the power sometimes of just leaving the reader's brain to just fill in the art, because it's there. If you've done the work ahead of time, it can be there. And I think that to bring it back to Surf's Up, to your newest book, I see that happening so much there as well. Here's a picture book that is told strictly through dialogue. There's no description at all, other than one character telling the other character about what's going on in this book, dude and bro. One that wants to go surf, and another that's just like, dude, I'm in this book. This book is great. I need to read this book. What's happening? Oh, this is happening. And just moving on like that until there's a point when literally as well as figuratively, they both just get lost in the book. And I know that that's not something that was written out for the illustration, like as a note, because I talked to Kwame. So I rarely get the chance to talk to both sides like that. But I know how, I guess, sparse, if you will, that manuscript was when you got it, because of the respect he has for illustrators and what people like you can do. But I also know that when I look at this book, it doesn't look like that. It looks like, oh, this must have been planned the entire time. It just, it's, you have done a beautiful job interpreting the story through his words. And he has done a beautiful job anticipating what an illustration could be without ever seeing one. It really the both of you have really done a fine job on this book.
Well, I really appreciate that. I'm really thrilled too that you got to talk to Kwame before this. And, you know, when I listened to the interview you guys did, you know, it was great to hear, you know, kind of what he was bringing to it before we ever made contact, because that, you know, I'm not often privy to some of those, you know, thought processes. I'm just thinking, okay, somehow this manuscript ended up in my inbox, you know, or to my artist rep, and then it made it to my inbox. And, you know, for me, I had done Pardon Me,
yeah,
you know, previously, which is, I mean, there's barely, if I can remember right, there's barely, what, 40 words in that book, but it's all dialogue driven as well. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I kind of had that dynamic going on there. So I wasn't afraid of a dialogue driven manuscript. But when I saw Kwame's manuscript, you know, it was before the Newbery announcement. And honestly, I was like, well, gosh, I gotta bone up on, you know, Kwame Alexander's work. I gotta figure out, you know, what, what has he written? Who is this guy? And, you know,
who is this Kwame Alexander? I love that.
This? And, but the first thing I thought about the manuscript was, you know, what fun and engaging dialogue. I immediately started imagining the characters and, you know, and how they would treat each other. And, you know, it, you know, to me, that's just a reflection of who he is and his insight into people and human relationship. And it just kind of spills out in a really engaging way. But I thought, okay, I've got this back and forth. But before I could say yes to doing the project, I had to have an idea in my head of where I might take this, you know, because it needed to be taken somewhere. You know, because with just the dialogue, you can't just have, you know, two characters turning their heads, speaking to each other on every spread. You know, you gotta, it has to be engaging in some way. Kwame and Beth Terrell from North South, they did have some, you know, specifics that they were interested in. You know, Kwame might have mentioned, you know, he had a few notes, but it was like, you know, the idea of using imagination and reading kind of sparking that,
yes,
know, that was a big deal. And I thought, well, that's the reason to do the book, you know, right there is the power of reading and imagination. And how does that happen in a kid and how is it contagious? You know, I thought that's the reason to do it, but the how was still kind of mysterious. And,
yeah,
and it was like, okay, it was described to me as these two characters, they needed to be frogs. They're going to the beach. One wants to read a book. The other one wants to surf, you know, and we're going to use the story of, you know, a big nod to Moby Dick, but we didn't have to be overt that,
but this never is saying it. Right.
Right. But it's like, okay, so with those parts and pieces, what would you do? And I just started thinking, God, there needs to be some action or something that's paralleling this, this kind of emotional journey the two frogs are going on. You know, one is just elated because he's already fallen into this story and he's, you know, enjoying it and knows kind of how to do that. But the other one, dude is just wanting to get to the beach, you know, doesn't understand what the fixation is, but it's kind of an annoyance. And so I was thinking, you know, how do I create a parallel journey, something that the viewer gets and understands, but the two frogs don't necessarily get and understand. And then at some point in the story, I knew I wanted those to cross over. You know, I wanted them to kind of literally collide. And so, so I thought, well, maybe the trick is how they get to the beach. You know, I know they're on their way, but how do they get there? You know, maybe it's something that adds a little element of, you know, of required attention, you know, like a push scooter. It's like, well, you gotta, you know, my kids have those little Razor scooters and, you know, they'll often like be sailing down the driveway, and if there's a rock or something in or crack that they're not paying attention to, they'll do a face plant, you know, onto the concrete. But it's like that is an example. I was like, well, it doesn't take much, you know, to require, you know, to make the viewer think, oh, it's it's foreshadowing. I see this coming, but they don't see it yet. You know, it's like, wake up, frog, look ahead, you know. Something to kind of get you pulled in as well. And at that point I thought, well, that's my device, you know, that's my thing that, that is just going to feel like it's just kind of coincidental, but but it's really integral to this story and right. getting them from real life to the imagined world and back again.
Having that pushcart gives it movement already, right? But I think yeah. that one of the other things that I found powerful about the story and the way that you both told it, one, to have what is going on, what Bro is sharing is happening throughout the story, to have what he's describing being imagined larger and larger until it takes over the page, and then ultimately until they fall into the story. Okay, let me point out two things. Here's something that so we were talking earlier about what kids are going to say and show you, and I yeah. am going to need you to come back to me, even just in email, and tell me, because I'm already excited about what they're going to say, and I feel like this isn't fair. I'm not going on the book tour. I'm not going out on school visits. I'm not going to get to hear. I'm excited for you. But I loved, okay, just on the surface, I love that these two are wearing helmets while they're reading. And I know you're going to tell me, well, they're wearing helmets because they're on a pushcart. But I love the idea of falling into a story and needing to wear a helmet, because sometimes when we fall into a story, it's bumpy. We don't know what kind of story we're going to fall into. So there's an imagery there that was just right. working for me, that I was like, oh, this is good.
Well, reading isn't always safe.
No doubt.
And that's the good thing about it, you know?
One of the other qualities I thought was amazing, though, and this has even been since I talked to Kwame, which at the time of recording this was about 2 weeks ago, okay. Is that I thought not only does this story, I talked to him about how I thought there's so much here in terms of what could work as like a reader's theater. When you read this aloud, mm-hmm. it felt exactly like an Elephant and Piggy book to me, which is to say that it's kind of hard to read Elephant and Piggy aloud to a bunch of kids or even just your kid without taking on two different voices, or even better, without having a partner to read with you. And this right. book, I felt the exact same way, that I was like, as I was reading this to my son over and over, and as I've brought it into school now and shared it with those kids, I've been developing these voices for these two characters, right? And I was joking to Kwame about how one clearly is Keanu Reeves from Bill and Ted. I didn't go the Point Break route. I went Bill and Ted. Anyway.
Yeah, he brought up Point Break, didn't he?
I'm sure. Yes, I'm sure that was him that he did. But I almost felt a little ashamed in my childhood to not bring that part back up. But one of the things that I've reflected on that I really like about this is that if we take it as the theater of this story, if kids were acting it out, if some theater company decides to take it on, this is a book that we could read really, really fast. You know, the same way that pushcart could be going really, really fast down to the beach. You could fly through this book, and that would be fine to read it that way. Or you could go really, really slow on this book, knowing that a story is being read while, you know, we are literally reading this other story. Right. There's a novel being read within the span of a picture book. And just how much could be acted out, or how much happens in between these two, but enough that the whale scenes that you have going in the background almost feel like storyboards to me. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It feels like there's a lot bigger thing going on there that I expect that a child, if they're not acting it out in real life, it's going through their head. They're filling in those gaps in their brain, right. which is a really cool thing to step back and witness that happening in your book. And I want to just hear about whenever some kid or some librarian like does perform this for you when you go to a school visit, because I've heard things like that happen. Like, you know, when they, one school you're going to walk into is just going to have frogs everywhere, or you're going to like walk into the main school doors and the school doors themselves are going to be a giant white whale or something, or they'll give you a push cart to ride back to the library.
Hey, you know what? I hope those things do happen. I gotta say, I have been browsing eBay to look for some old captain's hats to see if I can find something. Because, you know, there's so much fun to just going all out with a story like this. And you know, you can't have pride. You can't be, you know, reserved. I think it's the kind of thing that the sillier, the better. And getting kids and teachers involved even better. Because that's what it's about, yeah. You know, letting a story take you away.
I agree.
And not just, you know, letting your guard down. Because in a serious way, I mean, I see these two frogs, like one is, you know, one understand what to do with imagination, at least how to enjoy it. And the other one, you know, is kind of guarded.
Yes.
And I would hope that however, you know, this is acted out or played out, that we can all encourage children to be a little less guarded and to believe that, you know what, sometimes reading can just be about having fun, and then we'll get to the big discoveries, you know, in the process. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it doesn't have to be a drag. It doesn't have to be something that is predetermined or, you know, prescribed. And, you know, it's okay. You know, it's okay to be afraid, to laugh, to call each other silly names. You know, my daughter and I, after we read this, you know, she's a new reader, and she's like amazed that she can start reading my books that I make. And and so she read Kwame's, you know, she read Kwame's manuscript. She had the FNG, and you yeah. know, and she was reading it, and she was like, she says, she started calling me bro, and I called her and I called her dude. She's like, don't call me that. I'm not a dude.
Oh, that's awesome. You get to have those moments. That's cool. So does she get to see your art, like, become the art that's in the books? She must. She gets to visit your studio, right? It's your studio in your house?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a wife, two kids, you know, trying to hold down jobs. It's like, you fit it in when you can, and you do it any way you can. And
right.
So I'm often spread out at the dinner table or wherever, and, you know, working on something. And she's like, well, I'm getting my paints too, you know, and she'll saddle up and
that's cool.
And start working. And, you know, and she'll be like, inevitably, you know, Dad, can you stop what you're doing and help me do something over here? You know, she loves being a part of that process. And for her, you know, you should have heard her the morning of the Youth Media Awards. She was like, Dad, I think your book is amazing. Dad, you're one of the best picture book makers I know. And for her to be kind of in my corner and be cheering me on, and, you know, to take a keen interest in what I'm doing is really exciting.
Yeah.
But
can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
Let me tell you a secret. We were all in your corner.
Oh,
when we're all, to be fair, we're all in a lot of people's corners. And I know that there's a committee that chooses and all that. Yeah. You've got so many people championing your books, man. Your stuff is gorgeous. And I'm not going to let you go tonight without talking about Float, 'cause I have a whole lot of love for that book. But that is so, so sweet to have a daughter be able to pick up on the fact that this is a big thing that's going on, and that as much as you don't want emotion tied to it, how you're human, how can it not be tied to it?
Absolutely. And you know, for her to, you know, she recognizes that, you know, now that making and telling stories is an actual pursuit.
Yes.
You know, that's something that has power and value in people's lives. And, you know, that's the thing that really gets me right in the heart is,
that's cool.
You know, when she goes off and writes her own story, or she draws her own story out and staples it all together and says, you know, Dad, check out my book, check out, you know, what I'm going to share in class and show and tell today. You know, to me, that's exciting because, you know, she's starting to get it.
That's amazing. You know? When you do your, I guess maybe even your beginning stages of your art, it probably changes throughout, but what medium do you tend to use? Is your work digital, or are you doing like traditional first and then scanning it in?
It's, you know, it's a mix. Each story is different. Like
I figured, yeah.
Like Float, for instance, was a lot of watercolor and ink paintings that I compiled digitally. Like I would paint my background separate from my characters.
Yeah, because, I've heard of that process before, yeah.
You know, just because for that book, I wanted there to be a contrast between this wet, gray world and the main character and his yellow, bright yellow rain slicker. But, you know, you never know when you might want to change course on something and move something here or there. And it's nice to have that flexibility for me. So, and plus I love texture and I love mark making. And I find that I get braver with my mark making if I know that, well, today I'm painting watery skies. You know, I'm just painting skies. You know, I'm trying to get this tumultuous looking cloudy sky, and I'm not overworking it or worrying about it as much, because I'm not thinking, well, if I get too crazy with this cloud, then I obliterate the character in front of it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. It's not like you have to start an entire painting all over again, because you're just isolating a component of it.
Right. And you can let, you know, I'm a real kinesthetic learner, and I, you know, I can get a lot more action and movement in my paint marks, you know, that way. And then basically I document it, you know, I scan it, you know, or sometimes I'll scan things before I ruin them, you know, I'll scan it and then I'll paint back into it, hoping that something better happens. But oftentimes I can't beat my first inspiration. So, so I use digital to compile it as a collaging tool, but I paint probably 85% of my stuff, my elements, separately, and then put them together. But I am starting a book now that I'll be painting just with ink. It'll just be ink on paper. So it, you know, it just depends on the story and, yeah, and what it calls for. But I love painting. I love drawing. I love texture. You know, that's something I'm always looking for. Like, what is the inherent texture and feel of this versus that? And why is it that way? And how do I exploit that? I think that's a fascination of mine ever since I started doing printmaking back in college. You know, I love the surface texture of things, the unexpected stuff that happens with paint and materials, and, you know, just how do you capture that? How do you make it a part of your finished art without kind of beating it into submission? Because, you know, that's how I was trained. You know, you just, yeah, you paint it and you paint it and you paint it until you've got it under control. But, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that, you know, if I can just use discernment and let things happen, and, you know, sometimes my ability to pull back or not over finish something is the thing that's going to help it, you know, be its best thing. So I try to stay loose and keep it open. I don't want to say, you know, this is exactly how I work and I'm always going to work this way.
Oh,
because
no.
Who knows? I mean, a story might come along and I say, you know what, I gotta reinvent myself, because this story is just so epic that it needs this approach.
Well, I like the idea that, and this happens in picture book making, and because I've heard it before and I like that, but getting a manuscript and feeling like I can do this, but it's going to take me stepping outside of my comfort zone. And that's actually why I want to do it.
Absolutely.
That's a really exciting thing to hear. Hey, so Float. Okay.
Yeah.
So you've heard all the praise about Float, I'm sure.
Oh, boy. It's been really overwhelming. Wow.
That book is gorgeous. I mean, that book is like seriously gorgeous, and you should make, there has rarely been books that I felt like, you know, if we were back in the wallpaper days and we had those, like, remember those middle like strips that would just run like a belt around the room,
uh-huh.
And those borders, like,
yeah,
just to see your entire book stretched out across an entire room like that, or a library, would be amazing, because I think then you could see the storm come and the storm leave and the sky, the blue sky arrive. But for all that you've done in Float, I have never had kids articulate more strongly that weather was a character in this story than your book. And that, to have them give that back to me, is something so beautiful, to know that I'm not like, well, let me tell you why this book is good. You see the rain. No. Also, your book gets checked out just for the end papers on some cases, which is amazing.
It's a how-to manual.
It's amazing. I guess to me, like, I take for granted, some of them have asked about that. Why would you make a paper boat? It's just going to go and get ruined in the water. I'm like, you've never done this before, have you? Because reading this book, I go, oh, this is the kid that I was growing up. I bet Daniel was probably that same way, because where else would you pull, or had some sort of experience like that? Because where else would you pull from wanting to make something out of paper and take it out into an environment where it will get ruined, other than having the experience of knowing that it's worth it, even for just a minute? But
absolutely,
some of these perspective drawings that you've done, where we are, I always call it this way, this is the wrong way to call it, but I know you'll understand, when the camera is down like in the gutter, along the sidewalk, and we see all the water rushing down the sidewalk, and we can feel that boat coming toward us, and in the other case going away from us. There's a lot of work you do, like camera work, if you will, on that book perspective, that I think carries this story in really, really cool ways. Not just that it is wordless and so we're reading it, you know, through the pictures, but also that we're seeing it, the story happen from all of these different vantage points. That's something that I think is what connects that book so personally to different children, because I think that they, and to different readers, because I think that it causes us to have a stake in the story. And that's a really impactful way to tell a story.
You know, see, I've learned something new about my book in just this conversation. The idea that, you know, it is kind of a trend so far for me where the setting or the stage becomes part of, you know, the story in a critical way. You know, you said it, the weather is a character in the book. You know, I honestly didn't think about the weather as a character, but it was kind of a, you know, a young child versus nature in a way for a lot of the book. And I guess in that way, it was, but, you know, for a wordless book, when I started building the story out, I realized that emotional beats were the things that I had to work on. You know, it was the, if you did an outline, you know, those are the things you're describing. You know, you're not describing, you know, a phrase or a line. It's really like, how is the boy feeling, or what happened to cause that? You know, those are the things that you're scribing to know, you know, did I cover it? You know, is there a proper arc? Are there things happening that are really supporting the story here? And, you know, when you start drawing out those emotional beats, you know, for me, you know, growing up loving film, loving cinema, loving TV, you know, you realize that camera angles and the way where you put the viewer, so to speak, is, you know, for me, it has to be about emotion. You shouldn't just say, well, this is a cool camera angle, so here you go. You know, because it could easily get jarring or redundant, or, you know, any number of things could happen by doing that. But if you go into it with, I think, with the intention of saying, well, this is the emotional beat here, and this is how this boy is feeling or how he's going to feel.
Yeah.
You're setting something up next. Then the camera angle, you know, can really enforce that, or reinforce that. And, you know, you mentioned the, you know, the boat, when the boat's in the foreground, it, you know, and there's that, it looks like 1 point or 2 point perspective where, you know, the boy's in the background and he's small and he's kind of freaking out because his boat is now taking off faster than he expected. You know, things like that. It was all about expressing not just a physical distance between him and this object, but an emotional one. And so hopefully, you know, when viewers come across the camera angle, my hope was that the changes in camera angle affect them emotionally without them really knowing it, because I don't want a reader to be obsessed with, you know, the mechanics of, you know, of the drawing or where I'm moving them around. I just want them to feel their way through it.
Yeah.
And hopefully that's what happens, but, you know, because after the fact you can break it down, you can decode it and, you know, well, and really think about it. But
that's the emotion there though, of, I think where they were hitting at the storm versus the child, because there are these points that you can, if you were describing this book, you could almost speak the story from a perspective where the rain, the water was really trying to take the boy's boat away.
Right.
All this pulling the boy's boat away, the strongest emotional beat for me in this story, and it could be because I'm an adult, but I'm willing to bet the kids saw this. But you also, here's another weird thing about your book, and then I'll tell you that beat. But another weird thing about your book that I think is beautiful is that we don't talk about the book. It's this beautiful, wordless experience. The children have talked to me about how beautiful they think it is and what some of the things were that they meant. We've never dissected the story. We've never said, yeah, what was this? What was whatever? What do you think happened in the story? How would it, you know, give it to me in words. What if you had to write out the story? No, these children appreciate it so deeply for it being in exactly the format that it is, without words, in, you know, black and white and gray with spots of yellow. But the point, the emotional beat that was like the timpani drum for me was when the boat crosses the intersection, the street, and you didn't have to do this. I mean, I'm very aware as an illustrator that didn't even have to happen. We didn't have to cross the street. It could have just been on like some long back road or something. But the fact that he crossed the street and the fact that boy stopped and that we saw that he was not in danger.
Yeah.
The boat was in danger. He was not in danger. That was a really deeply, profoundly powerful scene for me. One that there's no way I'm ever going to shake that image that you created. And that to me speaks to what a great artist you are, Daniel, and what a great storyteller you are. You've packed that punch in your art.
Oh boy. You know, all these details, you take a first swipe at it and you say, okay, this is what the story is. But then working with a publisher, like I worked with Kristen Ostby over at Simon & Schuster. She's my editor on this one. And, you know, and the designer, Chloe, we would talk through this dummy and we would look at it and say, okay, what's going on here and there. And, you know, we try to be keenly aware of the fact that, you know, I went from a book where you had animal characters, you know, pretty much doing each other in to a book where you have, a human, a child, a vulnerable child who is enjoying the freedom of playing outside. And, you know, who is kind of unsupervised. I mean, this child is having an adventure.
Yes.
And I think that's something I remember fondly from my childhood, and I know a lot of people do. You know, I used to play in woods, you know, near my house, and playing in creek beds and you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So having that be a part of it was important. But you know, you're right. We did have to think through and process, you know, what are the particulars of these moments. You know, for one, you want him, you know, to almost get near his boat. He's trying to catch it, but he doesn't, for whatever reason, he doesn't quite get it. You know, it's almost within reach, but then this kid knows that when you come to a crosswalk, you stop and you look, because that's what I hope for my children. I sure hope that for every other child that's out there. Because, you know, you don't want to ignore the fact that, you know, kids have those moments where they have to make those judgment calls, but you also want to, you know, show it in a responsible way, in a way that, that just encourages children to be self-sufficient and do, you know, make the good choices. But also emotionally, it created a nice spot for, you know, for that boat to be on its way before he could, you know. Yes. Just that patience that I really want to run, but I got to give it a moment. You know, that to me was a critical element. And however it happened, if that was the scene that worked, great, but maybe it could have been something else. Maybe there was another solve. I don't know. But that seemed like a real elegant way to solve it. And, you know, and everything about this book had to be economized. You know, yeah. I had to decide, you know, this moment's critical, this moment's not. And I mean, I appreciate you bringing it up and calling that out, because I don't know that everyone would feel that way. You know, some people would say, well, just avoid the street altogether. You know,
I think that book is exactly what it needs to be. And as I'm staring down at the end of our time, I think that this chat was exactly what it needed to be too. Daniel, I am so thankful to know the person behind this art that I admire so much, and to know that you're making more stories and that you're creating art at the table beside your daughter. You're just a wonderful human being, and I'm really thankful that we had a chance to talk tonight.
Matthew, thank you so much. This is an absolute pleasure. I, you know, this is not one of those things that this kind of interview and interaction is not something I planned or would expect in making picture books, but it sure is a nice outcome to be able to have these kinds of conversations.
Well, I'm glad that we have this outlet together. And speaking of being together, we're going to go out onto the kickball field, Daniel, for one last question.
I love kickball.
Here it is. I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament. I would love to know what one person alive or past from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
Okay, is Kwame already on the team?
Sure, I'll allow it.
Okay, so he's already on the team. You know, this past year I've gotten to know a lot of new folks in the Kidlit world, and one that I didn't know before but got to know online and through a couple of events is Amy Dykman.
Yeah. Amy's the best. She's unstoppable.
And I think any kickball team would be honored to have someone like that on their roster. She's got a lot of energy. She's really, really positive. She's wildly creative. And I think that's just kind of the person you want on that diamond when you're trying to beat another team.
I couldn't agree more. She is a shining light in children's literature, and I'm glad that she's out there. Maybe one day we'll see an Amy and Daniel book together. What?
That would be amazing.
I don't know how publishing works, but you know, sometimes things like that happen and you're like, holy crap, these two people are making a book together. So
I think there's a wheel they spin somewhere.
Oh, well, as long as, I mean, hey, you've got some books published. Your name is now on the wheel.
I guess so. That's nice to know.
Daniel, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to everything else you have coming out. I'm excited to see. And thank you again for coming on to share Surf's Up and to talk to me just about everything.
Thank you. I couldn't be more pleased. This is awesome.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and The Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Next up on Let's Get Busy, Julie Filatko and Tim Miller share the story behind Snapsy the Alligator Did Not Ask to Be in This Book. And later in the week, James Kennedy talks about the 92nd Newbery Film Festival. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.